ينبرين الشيطان. Before, or rather, after hearing the last chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, which described the Leela avatars, Prakrit Maharaj had heard about the Lord's dealings with the material world. How wonderful actually are Krishna's dealings with the material world, because he personally, through his expansions, creates everything. There is nothing separate from him. Yet inconceivably, although everything is resting, although he is everywhere and is everything, he is nevertheless separate and completely aloof. This is very wonderful. So after hearing how Krishna was everything within the material world, how everything sprung from just a spark of his splendor, Mama Tejo Angsa Sambhava, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Then Prakrit Maharaj heard how the Lord, in a different way, enters into the material creation. He enters in through the unlimited Leela avatars, and they are as numerous as the waves of the Ganges, uncountably numerous. And then we heard how Brahma simply glorified the Lord, who was inconceivably powerful, and to understand him, one must simply surrender to him, because regardless of how intelligent, how clever we are, how fast our CPU is, no matter what facilities we have at our disposal, Krishna is unlimitedly more vast. He is ununderstandable, yet he can be understood through surrender by his own grace, as he reveals Dadami Buddhiyogam Tam, as he reveals himself to the sincere devotees who have surrendered unto him, desiring to please him. So then, in the final part of the last chapter, the Bhagavatam was glorified as being so potent, the potent sound representative of the Lord. And in the beginning of the eighth chapter, Maharaj Prakrit began to inquire more, because his questions had been answered. He asked questions in the fourth chapter, and in the fifth chapter, sixth chapter, and seventh chapter, those questions about the Lord's relationship with the universe. Because people generally conceive of God as the creator of the universe, and certainly God is the creator of the universe, but if he created the universe, that implies that he existed before the creation. So, if he existed before the creation, what was he doing? Was he just waiting? For perhaps billions and quadrillions of years, just waiting for the time for the creation? No. He has so many pastimes that have nothing to do with the creation. And if he existed before the creation, what form was he in? What does he do again? Is he alone? So actually, the relationship between Krishna, as we heard yesterday, is very wonderful, because Krishna is dealing with his energies, both the internal energies, the spiritual potency, which don't have anything to do with the material world, and the external energy, which has to do with the material world, the material energies. Both types of dealings are wonderful, because they display him as so, he displays himself as so far beyond a human being. He, in both cases, in his dealings with the internal energy and the spiritual world, his pastimes are so wonderful and sweet. And Krishna displays in the spiritual world his all attractiveness as he deals with those souls and his own energies that are in complete harmony with him. Just like the king in the court, or the king in his own quarters dealing with his family members, he acts in one way. He shows his sweetness, his magnanimity. But then when he deals with the prison house and the prisoners in the prison house, he deals in another way. He is the heavy authority, making sure that everything runs properly. But yet, that is in both of them are displays of his opulence, but the sweetness part of his nature comes out in his own court, with his own family members especially. So similarly, Krishna's sweet, the sweet, amazingly sweet and ecstatic dealings of Krishna come out, especially in Vrindavan, but also, of course, so wonderfully, extraordinarily wonderfully in his court of the spiritual world of Vaikuntha planets. And the material world is like the prison. He comes himself, the Leela avatar is just like sometimes the king may come himself. And if he sees someone, anyone he wants to give mercy to, he says, "Your pardon, you're free." "I'm free? But I'm in the prison like anyone else?" But simply by the king's order, free. So similarly, when Krishna descends to the material world as the Leela avatars, whoever he deals with, whoever he decides to bestow his mercy on, immediately free by his divine grace. How wonderful. So after hearing all this, Prithvi Maharaj, who was so thrilled because he had heard the order of Sukadeva Goswami, that he focused that what to do at the time of one's departure from this world, leading to one's death, is to focus one's mind on Krishna. And the hearing of the Bhagavatam, the speaking of the Bhagavatam by Sukadeva, was giving Maharaj Prickett the facility to do this. So he was very enthusiastic, and he wanted to hear more and more and more. So after glorifying the Bhagavatam in the first six verses, Prickett Maharaj asks for more or less the remainder of the chapter from text 7 until text 23. He asks many, many more questions. And these questions will be answered by Sukadeva Goswami, not exactly in the order that they're asked, but he will answer them in due course, one by one, each and every one of them. So, in text 7, Prickett Maharaj asked Sukadeva, "O learned Brahmana, the transcendental spirit soul is different from the material body." That he knows. But he asked, "Does he acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Will you kindly explain this? For it is known to you." So this particular question, how does the living entity begin his identification with his material body? After all, we are souls, we are spirit. We're eternal and the body is temporary. Now what is the cause of this identification, which is so strong that if anything that we feel in our body, whether pleasure or pain, we think it is happening to us? So what is the cause of this? I'm just going to read the last paragraph of the purport. In the process of devotional service, which means the way to understand everything and to get out of the identification with the body, the first step is to take shelter of the spiritual master and then inquire from the spiritual master all about the process. This inquiry is essential for immunity to all kinds of offenses on the path of devotional service, because Prickett Raj is asking, he will ask many, many questions having to do with the material world, the creation, time, annihilation, this and that, the Bhavarta Rupa, the universal form. So there is, on one level, there are the individual questions. And on another level, is just the simple fact that he's inquiring. What do questions imply? They show that he is very curious. And what does curiosity imply? That he's desirous of understanding. And what does that desirous of understanding imply? That he's enthusiastic. He wants to know, he wants to hear about Krishna. He's actually, when we hear all these questions, we see he's already just heard several chapters, what we will say, seven chapters. First seven chapters of the Bhagavatam, and rather than thinking, is the Bhagavatam over yet? That's already been seven chapters. That has brought forth to his mind unlimited other questions. He was experiencing such happiness from the hearing, and those questions, or what he had heard, spoke so many other questions. So he became more and more enthusiastic. Well, what about this and what about that? So Prabhupada explains in the purport, although he speaks in his purport about how the living entity gets his material body, which, by the way, will be the topic, the beginning of the topic of 9, of chapter 9. This is the question that will be answered first, I believe. But aside from speaking about that point, he speaks about the glorious nature of the inquisitive spiritual mind. So this inquiry, he explains, is essential for immunity to all kinds of offenses on the path of devotional service. Because there is a process, a specific process of devotional service, and to perform it properly, exactly, correctly, one has to inquire about exactly what the process is. Because if one unknowingly starts to perform devotional service and he doesn't understand the process, he can make many mistakes, offenses, and he could develop bad habits which will cause him difficulty later on. So therefore, inquiry is essential for the beginner even. But even if one is fixed in devotional service like Maharaj Prickett, he must still inquire from the realized spiritual master all about this. In other words, the spiritual master. So on one side there's the devotee to inquire, and on the other side there's the spiritual master. He must also be well versed and learned so that he may be able to answer all these inquiries from the devotees. Thus, one who is not well versed in the authorized scriptures and not able to answer all such relevant inquiries should not pose as a spiritual master for the matter of material gain. It is illegal to become a spiritual master if one is unable to deliver the disciple. So this is the very heavy weight of being a spiritual master. One has to be quite familiar. He has to know the process of devotional service. He must be learned in it, and he must be fixed in it so he can transfer that fixedness to the disciples. Text state. So the first question, what was the topic? And the spirit soul. And how did they get together? Accidentally? Did it just happen spontaneously? Or is there some cause? Second question. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whose abdomen the lotus stem is sprouted, is possessed of a gigantic body according to his own caliber and measurement, then what is the specific difference between the body of the Lord and those of common living entities? So Prabhupada explains this particular question in some detail in his purport, and he says that if Krishna, as the chief of the Leela avatars, if he adopts forms according to his desires, and according to necessity, and even he adopts a material form of the Bharata Rupa, a gigantic form according to the necessity, the universal form according to the necessity. And similarly, the living entities, sometimes they are souls, but they have forms of, like elephant. Prabhupada gives the example of a gigantic form of an elephant. And it's actually quite astounding when we think about it, that there's a soul, one soul in an elephant's body. In the huge elephant's body, and the same soul is powering a tiny ant's body. So how powerful is that soul? But in any case, if the living entity accepts forms according to necessity, and the Lord accepts forms according to necessity, what is the difference between the Lord's doing it and the living entity's doing it? So what is the specific difference between the body of the Lord and those of common living entities? So another question, the bodies. So far the two questions have been about bodies and souls, the Supreme Soul and his spiritual body and his Varata Rupa body and the living entity and how he acquires his bodies. Prickit Maharaj is asking again. These are all interesting. Brahma, who is not born of a material source, but of the lotus flower coming out of the navel abdomen of the Lord, is the creator of all those who are materially born. So on one hand, there is the Lord, who is completely spiritual, and there is Brahma, who is material, and he's the source of all the material living entities. So, of course, by the grace of... So he is the creator. Of course, by the grace of the Lord, Brahma was able to see the form of the Lord. So if Brahma... So Prabhupada explains this in the purport too. So if Brahma is coming from the Lord, and the Lord is spiritual, how could it be that Brahma is material? Are they of the same quality? Are they different quality? So we'll hear the answers to these questions. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. The first living creature, Brahma, is called Aja, because he did not take his birth from the womb of a mother materially born. He was born directly from the bodily expansion of the lotus flower of the Lord. Thus it is not readily understandable whether the body of the Lord and that of Brahma are of the same quality or different. This must also be clearly understood. One thing, however, is certain. Brahma was completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord, because after his birth, he could create living beings by the Lord's grace only, and he could see the form of the Lord. Whether the form seen by Brahma is the same quality as that of Brahma is a bewildering question, and Maharaj Prickett wanted to get clear answers from Srila Sukadeva Goswami. And we'll hear about Brahma's birth and activities in the third canto, which is coming up quite soon. There are 10 chapters in the second canto, and we are on chapter 8, and hopefully, if Krishna allows, we'll conclude chapter 8 today. Next question. So that question, the third question, was about Brahma and his body and its relationship to Krishna's body and quality. Then, please also explain the personality of Godhead, who lies in everyone's heart as the Supersoul and as the Lord of all energies, but is untouched by his external energy. So he's within the material world, but he doesn't have anything to do with the material world. He's in everyone's heart, but has nothing to do with it. It's the wonderful qualities of the Lord. Please explain that. O learned Brahmana, it was formally explained that all the planets of the universe, with their respective governors, are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Virata Purusha. I've also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virata Purusha. But what is their actual position? Will you explain that? Please explain that. So what is... How are the living, the demigods and the planets situated on the universal form? So, because we've heard about the universal form several chapters ago, and what is the relationship between the demigods, etc., and their planets with that universal form? Next in verse 12, about time. This will come out in the third canto. Also, please explain the duration of time between creation and annihilation. So the time in creation and how long the creations take and the annihilations. Will be, all this will be explained. And that of the subsidiary creations, as well as the nature of time indicated by the sound of past, present, and future. Also, please explain the duration and measurement of life of the different living beings known as the demigods, the human beings, etc., in the different planets of the universe. So, all having to do with time. Please also explain text 13, he says. Please also explain the cause of the different durations of time, both short and long, as well as the beginning of time following the course of action. Where will we get these type of, where else except the Bhagavatam will we get these types of very deep and philosophical questions and answers? And here's an interesting one, and Prabhupada has some nice explanations in this. Now describe, then again, text 14, kindly describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act on the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. So here we are, this is the question. Here we are, souls within specific material bodies. So, as a soul, I have been gathering karma for countless births. For countless births, and I carry this with me in the subtle body as I travel from body to body, from death to new life, from death to new life. I carry all this karma with me. Now how is this allotted out in a way that causes me to take one birth or another birth? What is this process of the allotment of karma? And how does it work? Promoting one person, degrading another person? So how exactly does karma work? Prabhupada explains, because karma or karma can elevate us in many, many ways. So as the verse says here, it can bring us to the demigod position, or it can bring us to a worm. So at the last paragraph, which begins on the next, on page 463. According to the statement of the Bhagavad Gita, 9:25, persons trying to qualify themselves for promotion to the higher heavenly planets can go there. So if one wants to enjoy the pleasures which are ununderstandable, more or less, to a materialist, heavenly pleasures, one can go there, but the materialist, he cannot, when someone thinks of heavenly pleasures in this world, what do we think of? We think of more of the same. Whatever we enjoy in this world, in the malls, in the downtown or whatever, or some parties or something like that, we think in the heavenly planets there must be so much more of that. And you don't have to pay or something. You don't have to pay your credit card bills or something. This is what it must be like in heaven. But it's not anything like that. Because everything, the consciousness is finer. Because one's enjoyment is limited or accelerated not by the sense objects exactly, but by the fineness of consciousness. So therefore you take a pig and you throw him in the gutter, and because his consciousness is so gross, he can't enjoy. No matter what you surround him with, he can't enjoy. The more fine and subtle, and that's what happens when one goes upward in the higher planetary systems. Once consciousness becomes more subtle, the grossness, the modes of ignorance are washed away, and one really enjoys in that way. So, because the kind of enjoyment that a materialistic person in Kali Yuga on Earth thinks of enjoyment isn't enjoyment, actually. It's actually based on the modes of passion and ignorance, which brings suffering and madness and illusion. Intoxication. This is not enjoyment. This is misery. Enjoyment is something completely different, practically speaking. So one has to make one's consciousness very fine and subtle, even to enjoy the material world. One is, and the basis of enjoyment is peacefulness and satisfaction. One can't enjoy if one's in anxiety. It's like if someone just lost his job, his best friend got killed, and also he found out that he has terminal cancer, and then he wins the lottery. Also, I mean, or anything, or he goes to the or whatever people do. You can't enjoy it because you're disturbed. Your mind is upset about so many things. How can you enjoy? You can take your favorite, the thing that anyone enjoys most, if their mind is disturbed, they can't even enjoy that very thing. So the basis of enjoyment is peace and satisfaction, which more or less doesn't exist in this world. On the heavenly planets we can enjoy. In this world, because we have so many desires, we want this and we want that, and so many anxieties and so many fears and so much envy, so much malice, we cannot be happy. We have to purify those things, even to enjoy materially. So, a person trying to qualify themselves for promotion to the higher heavenly planets can go there. Similarly, persons trying for the Pitri Lokas can also go there. Similarly, persons trying to improve the conditions on this earth can also do that. And persons who are engaged in going back home, back to Godhead, can achieve that result. Now, what is it based on? It's based on one's desire. The various actions and reactions of work in the mode of goodness are generally known as pious work with devotional service. Culture of knowledge with devotional service, mystic powers with devotional service, and at last, devotional service unmixed with any other varieties of goodness. This unmixed devotional service is transcendental and is called parabhakti. That means when one has no other desire, one has no other desire, the thing that is motivating one to act is Krishna's pleasure, to please Krishna. That is love, that is pure devotional service. It alone can promote a person to the transcendental kingdom of God. That type of desire, bhakti, to please Krishna, purely, simply, that is required to promote one to the spiritual world. Such a transcendental kingdom is not a myth, the spiritual world, but it is as factual as the moon. One must have transcendental qualities to understand the kingdom of God, God himself. More questions by Cricket Marsh. He's not finished asking. Please describe how the creation of the globes throughout the universe, the four directions of the heavens, the sky, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, and the islands, as well as their different kinds of inhabitants take place. So please describe all the creations and all the personalities who live in these different creations. Text 16. Please describe the inner and outer space of the universe by its specific divisions. What's going on inside the inner space and outside of the Virata Rupa, as well as the character and activities of the great souls. That will be wonderful to hear. The character and activities of great souls, because character We see so many characters, but that's not what is being asked about. But what is the character? What does character mean? Yeah? Like the personality traits of great souls. What is their integrity? What principles do they live by? Very interesting. The character. Because nowadays they make heroes. What kind of people are the heroes that the youth grows up with? They are not of very high quality and not very high character who the people emulate. They excel in singing or musical instruments or sports or this or that or some ability or another, but they don't have high character, integrity, moral standards, values. So to hear about the qualities of character of the great souls is wonderful. And also the characteristics of the different classifications of the castes and orders of life. So many, many questions he's asking. 17. Please explain the different ages in the duration of the creation and also the duration of each age, all the different yugas, and how long they last, all the different divisions of time in the creation, and the different activities of the different incarnations of the Lord in different ages. What incarnations come? We've heard about some of the Leela avatars. Also, please also explain what may generally be the common religious affiliations of human society. What are the dharmas of human society? The common dharmas. As well as their specific occupational duties in religion and the classification of the social orders and in the administration of the royal orders and the religious principles for one who may be in distress. This is very interesting because when one is in a difficult situation, in distress, the ordinary principles of religion don't exactly apply, like an emergency situation. So special laws come into effect when one is in a difficult situation. And here's what Prabhupada says about that for in relationship to devotees. And this is called, the Sanskrit for that is apadharma, because vipad means distress, like that. So apad vipad means distress. So dharma in an emergency, a distressful situation. Prabhupada says it very simply. People following the principle of devotional service of the Lord can never be put into difficulty. And thus, there cannot be any question of apadharma or religion in distress for a devotee. Now think about that. And who is the great example? Who is hearing? Who's asked this question? Maharaj Prickett. And if anyone would be in distress, it would be him. But he's not in distress, actually, because his devotion is so fixed. He's so fixed as a devotee. That means he's living in Krishna's mercy. So if one is in the mercy of Krishna, how could he be experiencing distress? He's just experiencing the affection of Krishna. Although externally it may look like the most distressful condition situation. But that state is not easy. It's easy to talk about, and we can glorify Maharaj Prickett and other exalted personalities, but very, very, very difficult. But yet, all of us at some point are going to hit our test, each and every one of us. Because death is stalking us all. And we must all meet our test of how tightly we will be able to hold on to our Krishna consciousness, our acceptance of Krishna's desire and Krishna's will as His mercy upon us. So if we are only thinking about Krishna and are clinging ever tightly, taking shelter of Lord Hari, then we too will transcend distress. This is very wonderful. So can the material world be free from distress even for a devotee? And the answer is that a real devotee is not even in the material world in this sense. The material world must be in distress. Someone in the material world must be in distress. But a devotee, mam cheo vibhacharena bhakti yogena sevate saganan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Because of his constant devotional service, he is not in the material world. He's on the spiritual platform. But yet, Pariksit Maharaj is asking about this apadharma, as well as other questions. Next, for the next 19 and 20, he asks about mystics and mystic powers and the devotional service and the method of mystic powers by devotional service. So this will be explained by Kapila Muni in the third canto, but also it will be explained by the Lord himself in the 11th canto. And then the histories. How this next time there's a conscious living festival, we could advertise. We'll be speaking about these type of topics, and all the people will be interested. What are the opulences of the great mystics? What is their ultimate realization? How does the perfect mystic become detached from the subtle astral body? What is the basic knowledge of the Vedic literatures, including the branches of the history and the supplementary Puranas, about the Itihas and the Puranas? Well, so many questions. And then getting near the end of his questions, 21. Please explain unto me how the living beings are generated, how they are maintained, how they are annihilated. Tell me of the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord. What is meant by advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service doesn't mean if you take the devotional service, what are the disadvantages of taking devotional service? It means how to perform devotional service in such a way that you gain the advantages and avoid the disadvantages. The practices will avoiding those practices that will disadvantage you in devotional service, and how to practice devotional service in such a way that you gain all the advantages of devotional service. That is what is meant. Now listen to Prabhupada's purport here. Samplava, in the sense of perfect means, is employed to denote the discharging of devotional service, and pratisamplava means just the opposite, or that which destroys the progress of devotional service. So that's how Prabhupada is using advantage and advantages and disadvantages of devotional service. One who is firmly situated in the devotional service of the Lord can very easily execute the function of conditioned life. Living the conditional life is just like plying a boat in the middle of the ocean. One is completely at the mercy of the ocean. Now, we usually don't think like this about our life in the material world. It is like a small, teeny vessel in the midst of an ocean. One is completely at the mercy of the ocean. And at every moment, there is a chance of being drowned in the ocean by slight agitation. We don't know when it's going to happen, or if it's going to happen today or tomorrow or the next day. And usually we don't think it's ever going to happen to us. But yet, this is reality. At any time, it can be squashed like a teeny bug. If one doesn't believe me, just pick up any newspaper on any day. It's like that day when I was taking pictures around Perth one day, and I saw Slava Prabhu, and we went to the newsstand, and he picked up the paper, and I took a picture of him. But the reason why I was really enthusiastic to take a picture, because I wanted to make a philosophical point, and the point was that life is misery. And the day before, I had seen a big headline in one of the newspapers that said just that. It said, life is misery. But I didn't have the camera with me. So I went back the next day and I asked the people if they had that, the newsstand, if they had it. And they said no. They didn't have any more of those. So I picked up today's paper, that paper, which was, and it said, life is distress. And I thought, oh, great. Slava, hold this for a second. And we took a picture. So it's just continuous story, really. If it's not misery, it's distress. And dangerous. So Prabhupada said, no one can control. If the atmosphere is all right, the boat can ply very easily, undoubtedly. But if there is some storm, fog, wind, or cloud, there is every possibility of being drowned in the ocean. No one can control the whims of the ocean, however one may be materially well equipped. One who has crossed the ocean by ship may have sufficient experience of such dependence upon the mercy of the ocean. So how does Prabhupada know about that? Because he himself crossed the Atlantic by boat on the Jaladutta. But one can ply over the ocean of material existence by the grace of the Lord very easily, without any fear of storm or fog. It all depends on the will of the Lord. No one can help if there is some unfortunate danger in the state of conditioned life. The devotees of the Lord, however, cross the ocean of material existence without anxiety, because a pure devotee is always protected by the Lord. The Lord gives special attention to his devotees in their activities within material conditional life. Therefore, everyone should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and be a pure devotee of the Lord by all means. So here are some of the advantages and disadvantages. Here's some advice how to practice devotional service. So that was just a preamble. So everyone should read these very carefully. I'll just read a few. One should know, therefore, from the expert spiritual master the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service. According to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the science of devotional service, one should not eat more than what he requires to maintain body and soul together. So if you want the advantage of devotional service and not the disadvantage, follow that. Vegetable diets and milk are sufficient for maintenance of the human body. Therefore, one has no need to eat anything more to satisfy the palate. One should not accumulate money to become puffed up in the material world. One should earn his livelihood easily and honestly. For it is better to become a coolie for an honest livelihood than to become a great man in society by hook and crook. There is no harm if one becomes the richest man in the world by honest dealings, but one should not sacrifice the honest means of livelihood simply to accumulate wealth. Such an endeavor is harmful to devotional service. One should not talk nonsense. A devotee's business is to earn the favor of the Lord. Therefore, a devotee should always glorify the Lord in his wonderful creations. So many things. And then in the last paragraph, well, not the last paragraph, but the next paragraph. The favorable conditions for discharging devotional service are that one should be very enthusiastic in serving the Lord. The Lord in his form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted the cult of devotional service to be preached all over the world in every nook and corner. And therefore a pure devotee's duty is to discharge this order as far as possible. Every devotee should be very enthusiastic, not only in performing his daily rituals of devotional service, but in trying to preach the cult peacefully by following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. If he is not superficially successful in such an attempt, he should not be deterred from the discharge of his duty. Success or failure has no meaning for a pure devotee because he is a soldier in the field. Preaching the cult of devotional service is something like declaring war against materialistic life. There are different kinds of materialists, such as the the fruit of workers. These are materialists. The mental speculators, the mystic jugglers. That's quite a picture of words, isn't it? A mystic juggler. And so many others. All of them are against the existence of Godhead. They would declare that they are themselves God, although in every step and in every action they are dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, a pure devotee may not associate with such gangs of atheists. A strong devotee of the Lord will not be misled by such atheistic propaganda of the non-devotees. But a neophyte devotee should be very cautious about them. A devotee should see to the right discharge of devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master and should not stick only to the formalities. Under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, one should see how much service is being executed and not simply in the matter of rituals. A devotee should not hanker after anything, but he should be satisfied with things that may automatically come to him by the will of the Lord. That should be the principle of a devotional life. And all these principles are easily learned under the... Maharaj Prickett inquired from Sukadev correctly, and one should follow his example. Next question. That question was about the advantages and disadvantages in performing devotional service. Next question, about living entities. Please also explain how, merged in the body of the Lord, living beings are created, and how the infidels appear in the world. Also, please explain how the unconditioned living entities exist, those who exist in the spiritual world. And then, finally, the independent personality of Godhead enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency, and at the same time, at the time of annihilation, gives them up to the external potency, and he remains a witness to it all. So something about the creation and the Lord's relationship to the creation there. So that is the end of the inquiries of Maharaj Prickett. Many, many interesting questions are asked. Now, in 24 to 26, he humbly requests answers to these questions. He's begging his spiritual master to please answer his questions. Listen to how sweetly he speaks. O great sage, representative of the Lord, kindly satisfy my inquisitiveness in all that I have inquired from you, and all that I may not have inquired from you, from the very beginning of my questionings. Since I am a soul surrendered unto you, please impart full knowledge in this connection. O great sage, you are as good as Brahma, the original living being. Others follow custom only, as followed by the previous philosophical speculators. There are six sadarshans, six philosophical systems in Indian philosophy, and he wasn't interested in any of these because they are speculative systems. To find the truth, one has to be hearing in the cyclic succession. So, because Brahma is the first person in the cyclic succession, and we heard, we'll be hearing again how the Lord spoke to Brahma. Hearing from a disciple, from Sukadev, Maharaj Prickett is saying, who heard it from Vyasadeva, who heard it from Narada Muni, who heard it from Brahma, is as good as hearing from Brahma. And then he says in 26, because of my drinking, O learned Brahmana, because of my drinking the nectar of the message of the infallible personality of Godhead, which is flowing down from the ocean of your speeches, I do not feel any sort of exhaustion due to my fasting. So even though he was fasting and not eating anything, he wasn't feeling at all tired in any way, because he was gaining energy due to his hearing these wonderful achyuta katha, the wonderful talks about Krishna. He was gaining energy. The energy was pouring into him from Sukadeva Goswami through his ears and his hearing. So Maharaj Pariksit was very happy to ask all these questions, and he begged Sukadeva Goswami to answer them. Now Suta Goswami, who was telling the sages of Namasharanya about how Maharaj Pariksit is speaking to Sukadeva, he now says, thus Sukadeva Goswami, being invited by Maharaj Pariksit to speak on topics of Lord Krishna with the devotees, was very much pleased. He was so happy to have such an enthusiastic, eager disciple who wanted to hear more and more and more and more about Krishna. So he was pleased with that. We'll just read a little of the purport here. Srimad Bhagavatam can be legitimately discussed only amongst the devotees of the Lord. As the Bhagavad Gita was authoritatively discussed between Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord and the devotee respectively, similarly Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, can also be discussed between the scholars and devotees like Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. Otherwise, the real taste of the nectar cannot be relished. Sukadeva Goswami was pleased with Maharaj Pariksit because he was not at all tired of hearing the topics of the Lord and was more and more anxious to hear them on and on with interest. Could you put the tape on? So Sukadeva was pleased, and this was because of the great enthusiastic desire of Maharaj Pariksit to hear and hear and hear and hear.
They sometimes say, can you show me God? Have you seen God? This question sometimes we meet. So the answer is yes. Yes, you can see God. Everyone can see God. How are you seeing God? But there must be the qualification. Let's say God is there. Suppose a motor car is there. Something is wrong there. Everyone is seeing. But one engineer or mechanic, he sees differently. Then we have to go there. What is wrong in this car? It is not running. Immediately catches some machine part with them. So these rascals, they do not know that how I can see God if I am not being qualification. The machine has gone wrong. I am seeing the machine. And the engineer, the mechanic, he is also seeing the machine. But he is seeing, and my seeing is the word. He is qualified to see. Therefore, when the machine has gone wrong, immediately he touches some part with us. See, if for a machine we require so much qualification, and we want to see God without any qualification, just see the God, without any qualification. Rascals, they are so rascals, so poor, that they want to see God with their nuisance qualification. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Naham prakara sarvasu, yogamaya samaprita. I am not exposed to everyone. Yogamaya is covered. Then how you can see God? But this rascal I will bring. Then can you show me God? Are you seeing God? God has become just a plaything. And here is God. He is the character of God. Tamana duskitanam murhapapadante marapama. Then sinful. Rascals, fools, lowest of the mankind, they inquire like that. Can you show me God? What qualification you have acquired? that he can see God. Here you call it. What is that? Satta Satta Dharamam. Oh. One must be first of all faithful. Faithful. Satta Dharamam. He must be very much eager to see God, actually. Not that as a proclivity, frivolous thing. Can you show me God? A magic, just like God is a magic. No, he must be very serious. Yes, if there is God, we have seen, we have been informed about God. So, I must see. There is a story in this connection. It is very instructive, try to hear. One professor reciter was reciting about Bhagavad, and he was describing that Krishna being very highly decorated with all jewels, he sent for tending the cows in the forest. So there was a thief in that meeting. So he thought that why not then go to Vrindavan and plunder this boy? He's in the forest with so many valuable jewels. I can go there and catch the child and take the all the jewels. That was his intention. So you are serious, I must find out and go. Then in one night I shall become millionaire. So materialist. So he went there. But his qualification was that I must see Krishna. I must see Krishna. That anxiety, that eagerness made it possible that in Vrindavan he saw Krishna. He saw Krishna the same way as he was informed by the Bhagavad Gita. Saying, you are so nice, Bhagavad Krishna. So he began to flatter. He thought that flattering has to take all the jewels. So, when he proposed his real business, so, may I take some of your this ornaments? You are so rich. No, no. My mother will be mad, right? Krishna has a child. So, he became more and more eager for Krishna. And then, my Krishna's association has already become pretty far. Then at last Krishna said, all right, we can take. And then we can be more immediately. Because by Krishna's association, somewhere or other, we should come in contact with Krishna. Somehow. Then we will be fine. Kamar, Payar, these are, just the gopis. The gopis came to Krishna being captivated by his beautiful feature. They were young girls, and Krishna was so beautiful. So, actually they came to Krishna being lusty. But Krishna is so pure that they became restless of devotees. There is no comparison of their devotees. Because they love Krishna with heart and soul. That is the quality. That is the quality. They love so much Krishna that they didn't care for family, for reputation. When they are going at dead of night, Krishna's fruit was there and they are all free. Their father, their brother, their husband, where you are going? Where you are going in this field of man? They didn't care. They neglected their children, their family, everything. We must go to Krishna. So, this is required. We must be very, very eager so that as many gopis were forcibly stopped going to Krishna, they lost their life. Just see how much eager they are. That this eagerness is wanted. Any can see God. Either you become lusty or a thief or a murderer, whatever it be. Some or other ego develop this eagerness that I must see Krishna. Then Krishna is.
that was very pleasing. The eagerness of Prakrit Maharaj was so pleasing to Sukadeva Goswami, and therefore he began to, as text 28, he began to reply to the inquiries of Maharaj Prakrit by saying that the science of the personality of Godhead, the answer to the questions that you have asked, the science of the personality of Godhead was spoken first by the Lord Himself to Brahma when Brahma was first born. Srimad Bhagavatam is the supplementary Vedic literature, and it is just in pursuance of the Vedas. So in this way, Sukadeva Goswami is going to answer the questions one by one, and Prabhupada explains in the purport of the next verse, he has asked the right person, he has asked such a qualified person, experienced teacher. He answered all the questions in a systematic way as they were received from the chain of disciplic successions, and he answered all of them without exception. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Prakrit ki jai. Sri Prabhupada ki jai.